That's a moon, a rock on Mars. They called that Adirondack for some reason. This is from the early days of MER. I've been using it as my wallpaper ever since. Not that you needed to know that particularly. Okay. This is more of a technique paper. It's a number of very simple techniques I've been using in recent applications I've been getting an awful lot of mileage out of I hadn't seen elsewhere, and so I submitted a paper on it. First, I want to start with a thought for the day. Everything's a string. We all know everything's a string. The fact is, some strings are more useful than others. Not all strings are created equal. Objects. I like objects. Objects have lots of advantages. You know, you do your abstraction, you encapsulate things, you get inheritance if you're not using SNIT. You can pass objects, can be passed as values, you pass the name of it as a value, and you get pointer semantics like you'd have in C or C++. You got one nice little token that gives you access to the object. You can capture all kinds of knowledge in a small package. Objects are cool. But you have to manage the object lifetimes. Unlike tickle values, they don't just go away and get deallocated when you're done with them. And they're opaque. You know, I can write a tickle value out to disk and read it back in again. If I write an object name out to disk, read it back in again, well, if it's a later execution of the program, that might mean something or it might not. If you want to get any data out of the object into a file, you got to do extra work. So consider an address record that's done as an object. This would be done in SNIT, probably, but any object system would work. We're using options to store the fields of an address record. Now, that works. You can do it that way, but as I say, the string representation is opaque. Address 1 doesn't tell you anything about what the address is. It's a pain to write to the disk. You got to get rid of it when you're no longer wanting it. You know, it's not perfect. On the other hand, you can add interesting behavior because you can add additional methods. You could add a validate method, for example, if you were reading these from a file that would verify this is a valid address. It has everything you need. Everything looks right. You can add additional query methods like last name, which would go look at a single name field and try to extract a last name for you. You know, you get the opportunity to add behavior. That's very cool with objects. You don't get that with values. Here's another way to do the address record. We're going to do it as effectively a dictionary if this were Tickle 8.5, or just a list of names and values if it's prior to that. This has some really nice advantages too. It's transparent. You know, you print one of these out, you can see what it is for debugging. It's really easy to see the data. You can pass it as a value. It has value semantics rather than pointer semantics. You can access it as a list. Write it to a file, read it back. Store it to an array, read it back. You can look at it in different ways in Tickle. It's a value. Tickle values are nice and flexible. Doesn't have pointer semantics, which is okay. You don't always want that. The main thing is, it has no behavior. You got one of these values, and there's no obvious way to access behavior, like getting that last name extracted or validating it or whatever. You've got to know where the code is to do that, or you got to repeat the code every time. It's a nuisance. So really, sort of the theme of this paper is, how can you get all the benefits of having values and value semantics and at the same time add behavior to them in a nice packaged way? Well, we've all written code like this, I'm sure. Just define a procedural API, you know, with all of the methods that you need. Address new, address get, address set, address validate, address last name, whatever you might want. Tickle's list API is basically this kind of thing. That's simple. It's ugly. Nobody likes these anymore. It's so early 90s. Pollutes the global namespace. One of the things is there's no convenient handle for the API. There's no way you could pass this set of operations to some generic method to use that's not ugly. Well, you could use these newfangled namespaces. You get something like this. Got an address namespace. You got your operations as procs in that. A lot of people have used this. Somewhat cleaner, maybe. Don't try importing address set, or you'll be unhappy. In fact, don't forget to use :: set in the implementation. You define a proc name set. You know, you're going to be in a world of hurt eventually. You're going to regret it. And it's not really all that much better than its predecessor. It's no less code. Yeah, you can look at it and see, okay, these are all address things, but the naming convention we used before did that. Well, then I've seen people, and I've done this myself. You've probably done this. You combine these, and you get the worst of both worlds. You don't have your problems with the address :: set not being importable, but on the other hand, you know, either you do import it and you get the same ugly names you started with and you're polluting your namespace, or you don't import it and you got this to deal with. And that's ghastly. So what we want to do is define what I call a type definition ensemble. It's an ensemble command. It's got subcommands. And, you know, this is sort of the more current way of doing things. The best example of this in Tickle right now is probably the dict command in 8.5 for dealing with dictionaries. Dictionary is a type. The dict ensemble defines the normal things you can do with it. But arguably string and file commands are also type definition ensembles in this sense. So you get a lot of value out of this. You got one convenient package called address. If you want to know what man page to go look at, it's the address man page. You don't need to wonder whether you've got one man page or five, you know, one for each method. One name to remember. The code's easier to read. You're only pulling one command into the namespace. You can put it in a namespace of its own or put it in the global namespace. It doesn't really matter that much because it's only one command. And you can pass that one command to other procs, other commands, and use it in a generic way, which can be very useful, as we will see later on. But in implementing ensemble commands has traditionally been a royal pain in the behind in Tickle. If you're doing it in C, it's relatively easy, which is why we see things like dict and string and file in the C APIs, and you don't see ensembles quite as much in the pure Tickle space, unless you're using some sort of object framework like SNIT or InkerTickle or Exotical. They'll all get the job done. Or if you're using 8.5, you can use Donald's namespace ensemble. And that'll do the job pretty well too. So we're at a point with SNIT in TickleLib, with Exotical and InkerTickle and ActiveTickle, and then in 8.5 with namespace ensemble, where writing ensemble commands is getting to be really pretty straightforward if you just learn a couple new tools. And you can take advantage of these to create your own type definition ensemble. So here, for example, is an implementation. This would depend on 8.5. of an address ensemble like I was looking at, like I showed previously. It's a SNIT type. SNIT types are ensembles. They have subcommands. Not just instances of them, but the types themselves are. Got some pragmas there at the beginning that remove unwanted behavior. For example, we don't need instances of this type, so I'm going to get rid of, you know, we don't have a create method anymore. We don't have an info method. We don't have a destroy method. We don't need them. I'm going to delegate unknown methods to dict so that the ensemble I'm creating is going to act just like dict for everything. You can manipulate dictionary objects, dictionary values, easily. But I can then also add the additional behavior that I want. I can add that last name method to extract the last name from the name field. I can add a validate method if I want one, whatever I like, just on top of dict. So what I get is address then is it's handling for address dictionaries. It's got all the behavior that I want, and it uses a familiar protocol, that of the dict command. So if I want to write generic routines that act on dictionaries but need a little more information, I can pass address in, or I could pass dict in or whatever to that generic code. Of course, This is an ensemble. Objects are ensembles too. That means that you can create type definition ensembles that are parameterized. You can have families of type definition ensembles. So, for example, suppose we've got an application where we have bounded strings for some reason. Tickle will deal with strings of arbitrary length, but we're writing them somewhere where we need to know the lengths. So I could define a string type that lets me set bounds. So I'll define two type definition objects here, string 40 and string 80, for 40 character and 80 character strings. We want to be able to validate whether a given string has that length. And so I can say string 40 validate and pass it a string, and it's either going to return the string unchanged or it's going to throw an error. And that ought to be typically a very human readable error you could use in your UI if you're using this to validate input from a file or from a command line. You could define a state type definition object or ensemble for your validating your state, two-letter state postal codes. You could define one for zip codes that will validate your zip codes, make sure they're 5 digits or 9 digits with a dash. Let's assume we've defined all these. These are not coincidentally all the fields that we had in that address structure. We got some strings, we got a zip code, we got state codes. We've got objects defined, type definition objects for all of those. Should say, we could have defined a string 40 object that contained the data internally. But then that's not a string. You know, this way, all the knowledge we need about string 40 objects, or string 40 values, we've got wrapped up in one nice convenient object. But the values of that type are just tickle strings, and you can do anything with them that you can do with a tickle string. You don't need to use special methods to access it as a tickle string. I'm sure a lot of us have had the experience in C++, where you're using a string object and then you need to translate it to a char star all the time for using older APIs. It's a royal pain in the behind. Don't want to do that. So, given I've got those five types that I defined, string 40, string 80, state, and zip code, I can take that address type that I had and turn it into a real genuine type with instances. And to define an instance, I'll call that struct. To define an instance, I give it a name address, and I give it a little schema that has field names and type definition objects for each of the fields. What I get out of it is address, which is it'll look pretty much like the one you saw earlier. It'll be a dictionary sort of thing. But now the validate method can be written automatically. The validate method will simply say, I should have five fields. They're going to be called name, street, city, state, and zip. And I know how to validate each one because I got a type definition object for each. So I can take any address stored as a dictionary, I can validate it, I can use the dictionary protocol to get things out of it, can romp and frolic. I'm going to go on to some examples that I'm actually using in my current project. I haven't talked about my current project much, and I don't really have time to, but there are some particular things I've actually done in it I'm going to talk about that use this idiom. Enumerations. Typically what we do when we want an enumeration, we don't have to define them like we do in C or some other language. We usually just use string literals wherever we need them. And they get scattered about, and we probably have a comment somewhere that says, these are the possible values. And in many cases, that's all you need. But what if you need to validate them? You're reading values in from a file, and you got to validate, you know, I've got these n values. Is this one of them? What if I want to index them? I'm using them to say index rows or columns in a matrix. Instead of using numbers, I want to use names. Well, then I got to convert between the name and the number and back again fairly often. Now, the first thing I did, what most of us would do, I'll use lsearch to do your validation and define the index, use lindex to look them up, given the index. And then what you find is, as you look through your code, you got these lsearches and lindexes all over the place, and they obscure your algorithms, and it's ugly. Plus, the variable that stores the list of all of the names, you got to keep in scope all the time, which, if you're using this enumeration throughout an application, gets to be a nuisance. And then you want to enhance it. You want to have not just your state codes, two-letter state codes, but you want to have the long names for the states as well. and you want to manage that. You want to be able to get a long name given a short name, or a short name given a long name, or either one to an index. Well, you start to need an API. And I would argue in this case, the right API is a type definition object. So I got one called enum, is the type definition type. And I can define an enumeration called state, and I just list short name, long name, however many I need. And that gives me an object that has quite a few things. And I should have deleted that last slide, unfortunately. So given a long name, it'll give me a short name. Given a short name, it'll give me a long name. Given a long name, if I had that long name stored in a variable, and so I wasn't sure whether it was a long or a short name or what, I can pass that into long name, and it'll give me a long name again. I can get a list of all the short names, or, of course, of all the long names, if I need to iterate over it for some reason or print it out. Given a long or short name, I can get the index. If I'm in a state of confusion, I can find out pretty quickly. Just pass it to validate, and it'll tell me, nope, that's no good. Yeah, should have been. I was working on this late last night. So that should have been state validate confusion. I apologize. Similarly, for data input in the app I'm working on, we have some rating scales, which are basically an enhanced enumeration where each symbol also maps to a floating point number. And you'd like to, given the symbol, know what the floating point number is. Given an arbitrary floating point number in the range, you'd like to be able to map that back to the closest symbolic value for output as well. So this is very similar to the enum. This is defining what we call a satisfaction, or QSAT quality. Again, I'm specifying short names and long names, but I'm also specifying the number there. And I'm specifying a min and max value for the numeric range, and also a numeric format that I want to use standard when I output one of these. And you've got a similar set of methods on these. It's using all the same kinds of things you can do with enums, plus a few others. Like you got value, given a symbol, you can get the number. I ask for the short name of 75, and that maps it back and says, well, that's closest to very satisfied, so that ought to be VS in double quotes. You can format them and so forth. We've got about, at this point, I think 9 or 10 of these qualities defined in the application for different kinds of rating scales, and we tend to keep these in matrices. So the form we're using for matrices is just a list of lists. Accessing that with Lindex and LSET tends to be about as quick as you can get. But, of course, I've got a type definition ensemble for matrices that, as you see, it'll retrieve the number of rows, it'll retrieve the number of columns. But it will also do things on quality matrices. For example, I can take a quality matrix with all symbols and convert it to one with the numbers in it by calling matNumerize, passing in the matrix and the quality that I want. And so now I have a generic routine for doing that for any quality I define. Similarly, I've got a pretty printing method. I pass in the matrix. I pass in row and column labels. I pass in the quality that I want, and it will dump out the matrix as text, showing me for each entry the actual numeric value, whatever it might be, and the closest matching symbol with the nice row and column labels. So it lets you do a lot of very generic code and reuse it pretty aggressively, while still keeping values, tickle values rather than objects. So basically, type definition ensembles and type definition objects, they compose nicely. They work pretty well. They've made our code a lot shorter than it might otherwise be. And given that you've got an object framework available to you that'll let you keep these, they're pretty cool. So, any questions? No, they are not. One of the problems of working at JPL is while we are a NASA site, we are also run by Caltech, which means they have first claim on any of my software. but I've got to work extra hard to get them to release it. On the other hand, given you've got an object framework handy, none of what I've described here is at all difficult to do. It's very straightforward. Okay.